Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are out there in Fish Explorer land. This is Tim Fishman Emery. You are listening to the Fishing Podcast on FishExplorer.com. If you're finding us on the web a different way, not through Fish Explorer, you need to check out www.fishexplorer.com because we are your best source for fishing information in Colorado, especially Colorado, and we will be expanding into the rest of the country soon, which is really fun and exciting. And it is my pleasure to introduce one of the legends of Colorado fly fishing. He has run a shop for many years. He is a poster boy for many shots that you see around the country. He is an avid saltwater fisherman, avid adventurer, but he is also the main owner of Cutthroat Anglers in Silverthorne, Colorado, Mr. Trapper Rudd. How are you?
Hey, Big T, how are you?
Thanks for being here tonight. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm actually glad I'm in the country to be here with you, bud.
That's true. We never know where you're going to be, so I'm feeling pretty lucky that I caught you here. And you're in Silverthorne right now, right?
I am, yeah. It's back on my domestic program, which is wonderful. I love it.
So you own Cutthroat Anglers. Tell us a little bit more about the fishing really in the Silverthorne, Dillon, Breckenridge kind of area and why you've been there and where you got your start.
Well, you know, we're very, very fortunate. We're at the crossroads of so much great fishing. You know, Summit County itself, you know, is very strategically located. I mean, within an hour's drive, say, of Silverthorne, Dillon, kind of that playground community up here in Summit, you can be in a, you know, multiple gold medal waters. You know, you've got the Frying Pan nearby, you've got the Roaring Fork, the South Platte, the Blue, you've got the Arkansas. I mean, it's really kind of this melting pot of rivers is often the way I refer to it, especially when I'm talking to people who are, you know, potentially coming up to visit and check out the area. It's really amazing. I mean, there's not a lot of places, I think, in the West especially, where you can have such close proximity to such fantastic fishing. It's a truly amazing thing, but we're very, very lucky.
And the shop that you own is right there off Highway 9, so you get off I-70 and go north, and you're down about, you know, what, a half mile or so, and you're right on the Blue River.
Yeah, it really couldn't be a better spot, you know, for a physical location. I mean, really one of the neat things is, you know, the closest we have to I-70, but also those major intersections of where you're going to go fishing. And speaking about the physical location itself being so close to the river, the other nice feature of the shop itself is, you know, you can bring your drift boat in. It's almost kind of like a drive-through fly shop, if you will. You know, we got plenty of parking, a big roundabout circle in the front, so I think, you know, where other places might be limited, you know, you have to kind of strategically plan ahead to visit the shop. Here you can roll in with your wet waders on, your drift boat in tow, your family, whatever, and just come on in and select what you want. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've never walked into your shop in wet waders and just sat down, have I?
Oh, man, I'll tell you. We always have to steam the carpets. You're a machine, bud. You get out there and get after it. So
sit down, have a beer, hang out with you guys.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, and that's really what, you know, the way we kind of designed the shop in the beginning. You know, I came from much humbler beginnings when the shop was Arapaho Anglers, and it was, you know, kind of a seasonal shop, if you will, in a very small operation. And I was fortunate enough to get a hold of it and kind of elevate it and morph it into this animal, you know, that it is today. It's, you know, having a fly shop is great, but when you add in the dynamic of having a guide service, which is, you know, kind of like herding cats, you know, then it really goes off the charts and on the wacky scale, and that's what the shop is. It's good. It keeps us all on our toes, and and we're all fairly unbalanced individuals anyway, but it's a handful, I can tell you.
Yeah, you guys definitely balance yourself out. So not only do you have a shop named Cutthroat Anglers right on the banks of the Blue River, but you have a guide service, which is fantastic, because I know about 3/4 of your guides, and some of the better guides that I have ever met. And one thing that I always learned when I was over in the Vail Valley was that I had trouble fishing the Blue River all the time, because I don't know why. It took me a long time to figure that darn river out. So I was scared to come over, but once I got to know you guys and Andrew and Clint and all those guys, I started learning how to fish the Blue, especially up there through town, through Silverthorne. And, you know, and it's one of those places where people can go because you can send your wife to the shops and you can fish. So remind me a little bit about how special that Blue is through town and how you really fish it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, if you really want to kind of become a guru of the Blue, you got to pay your dues. And the Blue is a very technical river, no doubt about it, especially through town. And the reason being is, you know, it's got the controlled flow, but it's a cold, cold river, and it's always cold. And that has a dramatic effect on the bug life and how you fish it. But I will share with you a wonderful tip and kind of a secret of the Blue, and I know you know this, Tim, because we've spent some time together and sharing ideas and exchanging casts and fish and having a good time out there. Really, the way I fish the Blue is nearly nocturnal. And, you know, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I prepare my gear or whatnot, grab a bite to eat real quick, and I'm on the water by 5 a.m., and I'm fishing by 5 a.m. And we call this little kind of sideshow, the Akibono Club, and that came from a Japanese guide of ours. Akibono means daybreak, and so we have this kind of small program, and I'm usually the only one there where, you know, if you want to join me on the Blue River at 5 a.m., you're welcome to. And I've had many clients and friends take me up on it in the past, and I'm sure that will continue. It's not a scheduled event. It's kind of whenever I get the notion. And but really, the key is to hit it early. And I think what happens is, and there's a lot of different possible reasons why it happens, but I think a lot of what happens on the Blue happens at night. And the mice and shrimp certainly, you know, come out of the dam 24/7, 365 days a year. But that early morning is kind of when the fish are kind of getting keyed up. They can see the shrimp again. They can see the bug life happening. Plus, you know, the holes haven't been walked through by other anglers. So that period in the morning from 5 to, say, 7:30 or whatnot, which coincidentally, as you well know, you know, is when we open the shop, kind of, you know, works very, very well. So you can go out there and whack a bunch of fish, you know, before other guys have even done the full body stretch and had their cold oatmeal. So it's a great time, really, you know, to hit the Blue. And it's neat because you get those strange happenings out there. Like, you know, you'll be nymphing your brains out and you're nymphing away and you got a good drift going. And then this monster fish just comes up and inhales your indicator. You know, it's those kind of neat, you know, neat things that you see in the morning, you know, and the mink will come down to the river, you know, and watch you, and you know, you got ermines and other critters running around. It's just, you cannot believe that you're in the town of Silverthorne. I mean, sometimes you look down that river, and it's so peaceful and quiet, you'd think you're up in British Columbia or somewhere. It's just a magical place in the morning. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, that is awesome. Okay, so for those of us who have been born in the Colorado fly fishing mentality, that the best fishing is from 11 to 2 all the time, what do guys do in the middle of the day that don't have the opportunity to get up early, that are just taking their wives out to shop, and luckily they get a couple hours to fish?
Yeah, we see a lot of that. I think it's just being mobile and being persistent. You know, the fish will always feed, I think, if they're given the right opportunity and it's presented in the right way. I really think mobility is the key. You know, from my experience, I see a lot of guys fishing a hole, say, Asbestos Alley, and that's a pretty well-known hole, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there right now are familiar with it, and that's the the whole directly underneath I-70. And for those that don't know what it is or what it means is when the big semi trucks come barreling off of the tunnel pass, you know, coming down I-70, mm-hmm. well, usually their brakes are on fire and they're smoking things up pretty good, so you can smell that asbestos burning, and that's how that hole got its nickname. Plus, you get this nice, wonderful shower of sparks and gravel and everything else, especially in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being there, you know, and seeing as much as I see, I think guys tend to pound, you know, the water a little too much. And I think if they were a little more mobile, they'd open up a lot more opportunities for themselves. And I think that's really what it boils down to. And because, you know, I think every angler knows, you know, rule number one, which is, you know, don't fish over vacant water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, if you're there and you keep trying and you're persistent, which I certainly applaud, you know, in anybody that's who picks up angling, you know, at some point you just got to say, okay, this just isn't happening here, and let's move on. And I think, you know, getting around on the river is really a big factor.
And I think that's really key in not only the blue where you're talking about, but any water that has some pressure, whether it's the Eagle or the Roaring Fork or the Frying Pan or the South Platte through Deckers. Really, the key is to move and really find those fish, because you're exactly right. Pounding the same hole over and over again, it really does not work very well, and you'll catch one or two fish, but you won't catch a lot of fish.
That's exactly right. And I kind of nymph the blue in the morning. Normally I'm nymphing it, you know, just because of the temperature factor. But, you know, it's almost like I'm moving at streamer speed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that's like. You know, you make a cast into a hole, strip, strip, no wham, move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Move on to the next hole, splat, strip, strip, wham. All right, fish, good. Well, you know, move on after that and just keep moving. You just kind of got to – it's almost like walking and fishing at the same time, you know, and really kind of keeping up a fairly good clip. And by covering, you know, all those different holes and those pieces of water that I want to see that I suspect are going to hold fish, I end up turning fish out of some of those, which is, you know, overall and in the long run, you're adding up a lot of knowledge as well because you're seeing a lot more water.
Yep. I use that technique a lot, and really one of my best days on the Frying Pan was actually doing that in the upper sections where there were people everywhere. But I just fish right behind everybody and keep moving up and down the river, and I was catching fish and nobody could figure it out why.
Right.
Finding those fish that haven't got the pressure because they're in sections that not everybody's going to fish. Not everybody's going to fish that big run. Or, you know, most people are going to fish that big run, but they're not going to fish the very tail of that run where those fish, there are a couple.
Exactly.
Or the very head of
the little tiny seams along the bank and the little rivulets that come pouring off the side road, you know, yeah. And they can hold some wonderful fish. This was a really good year, for example. We had such high water, and really I think what happened was Denver Water Board kind of miscalculated their holdback.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up having to really let it out, right? And they were letting it out, and it lasted, you know, many weeks longer than it normally would. Well, I certainly don't recommend this for everybody, but I was out fishing when it was up around 1,200 or so. And what happens is, you know, like a lot of rivers, you know, the fish get pushed down from where they would normally live and feel comfortable, and they move into areas where they can just maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big thing. And if you work the blue, my advice is work it slowly from the banks as you're moving up. Don't just, you know, walk and walk and walk to your next spot while you're moving, but, you know, pay attention while you're moving. Because I found some magnificent fish this year that were holding in water right up tight to the banks with just enough water to cover their backs. And that was, and surprised me. I mean, I found a couple fish that really, really surprised me. We're talking some Goliath fish here that were, you know, that live up at the dam, they get pushed down during high water, that are just trying to maintain some sense of stability for themselves in their own location. So it's an amazing river, you know, and it's been, I don't know, 30 years or so for me fishing the blue, and I'm still surprised by it all the time. It's a very unique place, that's for sure.
Yeah, you definitely live in a unique area, and, you know, Dillon Lake is fantastic as well for fishing. I know a lot of our Fish Explorer guys who are lake guys go up there and fish the lake for the kokanees and the browns and so forth like that. And the interesting thing that Dillon, and this is a personal thing for me, there was a town at the bottom of Dillon, or Dillon Reservoir, that they flooded. My dad used to live there, and we have pictures of him driving, picking up his A-frame and bringing it up to the banks that are up above the marina right now. So,
yeah, that has a great history right there. You know, I'm sure that the underwater town now is populated with a lot of lost fishing lures. it probably looks like Christmas down there.
It probably does. It's great. So, Trapper, we've been talking about the stuff here locally in the mountains. Now, you also live in Florida half the year and get to go do some crazy, amazing trips. Tell us about one of your latest crazy trips. Actually, tell us about the video you showed me down in Florida, because that was a hell of a story.
I just returned from doing some Mako shark fishing on the fly out in San Diego. And that was just, you know, within the last couple of days. And then, you know, of course, I was in Florida with you the week before that. And then just, are we talking about the snook video? Or is that the one
barracuda.
You were talking about?
The barracuda.
Oh, the barracuda, yeah. Well, there's a...
There are so many stories. Where do you start?
I know, exactly. God, you know, I'm going to have to start my memoirs or something here. Well, we had a... I've been working for a lodge down in the Yucatan and kind of charting and exploring their backcountry, you know, trying to get into some water and find fishing locations that you could reach from a kayak, not necessarily just a skiff. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time, so you subsequently end up getting out on the water kind of in survival man style, where I'll have the video cameras and still cameras mounted on a lean bar on my kayak, because these particular kayaks I use, you can stand up in and fish, and they're exceptionally stable.
And they're Freedom Hawks, right?
Yeah, they are Freedom Hawk kayaks, and so, you know, if anybody's interested, certainly look them up. They're absolute fishing machines. You can sneak right up on top of fish. I've had snook come and eat live pilchards, you know, right in front of my boat, you know, where I could have reached out and touched them with the fly rod if I needed to. It's just amazing what you see with those things, because you're so intimate with the water and the fish at that point, because you're so stealthy.
Right.
It's just incredible.
Right.
But I found this new lagoon on a GPS, and on our GPS, and I asked around to a bunch of the locals and the guides and just about anybody I knew down there, and they said, no, nobody's ever been in there. We don't know really anything about it. We don't know if there's fish in there or not. And so, of course, that piqued my interest right away, because you're either going to be a goat or you're going to be a hero when you come out from doing this kind of stuff. You know, you could go in and the place could be just a blank, you know, it could be as sterile as anything. Or it could hold some magnificent fish. And in this case, it was fairly sterile, but it did have fish. And what it had were these big cutas. And I think this lagoon had been closed off by a hurricane. And so whatever was in there kind of got eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that happens. So the only thing really that was left were the barracuda. Well, my buddy and I, Jeff Keane, were doing some video and charting this place and exploring it and fishing it. When Jeff hooked into this really nice cuda, and the cuda wraps himself around the mangroves, and at this point I pick up just a little quick digital camera point-and-shoot jobber, and Jeff goes, oh, I think I lost it. Well, the cuda came back around. It was still attached to Jeff's line, swam under his kayak, leaped out of the kayak, and actually landed in the kayak with it. And so, you know, Jeff's doing this amazing pirouette and flamenco move, all, you know, melded into one to the very tip of the kayak, and this cuda's in there snapping away at him, you know, in a fever. And it was amazing. He didn't even turn the kayak over, which I couldn't believe how stable the thing was. I thought for sure he'd go over. But it was pretty interesting to watch a barracuda, actually. And it was almost, it seemed really premeditated. It was bizarre. I mean, it was like the cuda had it out for him. And Jeff had told me that earlier. He said, this cuda keeps looking at me. I'm casted to it, and it's like, this thing's following me around. Well, you know, he eventually hooked it, and I think it must have been upset, because it actually jumped in the kayak with him. And that you can actually see that video on YouTube. If you go into YouTube and you search Casablanca Lodge, it'll bring up the Casablanca Lodge website, or video site, what YouTube site, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can scroll down through some of the videos, and I think it says, you know, like man-eating cuda video, or, you know, something to kind of, you know, to kind of get that mystique going, where you say, what the heck is this about? I got to check it out. And you can actually watch it. It's pretty neat thing for sure.
I'll tell you what, that it is a great video. When I was watching it, I was just amazed at, you know, he jumps out of the fish jumps in the boat, then he jumps to the front of the boat, which is a kayak, you know, which is 3.5 feet wide, maybe at the most, and it still holds him. He never goes over, which is shocking. These Freedom Hawk kayaks are great. Hopefully we're going to get them involved with Fish Explorer because I definitely need one, and I should be floating in one since my wife won't let me get a real boat. At least I can have a kayak to float around in. So hopefully that'll be coming down the road, and we'll get those guys on and really talk about those kayaks soon. So that's phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, it is. You can really do some amazing things in there, you know, and I actually, you know, will haul portage them, you know, through the mangroves and hack my way into some places and just kind of lay down under the mangrove overgrowth, you know, and pull yourself through these little mangrove tunnels to get into these little hidden lagoons. And that's where you really find those unique opportunities. You can't really do that in anything else. I mean, you can't do it, you know, by walking and waiting. You know, not effectively. You can't do it in the skiff, even though you can get skinny. You can't get skinny enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you certainly can't do it in the ponga or a larger boat. You can't do it in the belly boat. You know, so what do? You use the right tool for the right job, and you're in the chips before you know it.
Right, and in Colorado, the kayaks are becoming more popular as they do more muscle control and keeping the boats off the rivers or off the lakes. The kayak is going to be a great way to explore a lot of these reservoirs around here, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, mobility is the key in there too, buddy.
That's yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So, you know, I've taken up a bunch of your time, so let's recap. Your shop is Cutthroat Anglers. Located in Silverthorne. What's the website and the phone number?
We have two different URLs which will get you there. One is just cutthroatanglers.com, and the other is the easy one, which we've had for a long time, which is fishcolorado.com. And you can call the shop anytime. The toll-free number, if you're out there, is 888-876-8818.
It's fantastic stuff, and really for us, for Fish Explorer guys out there who are going up to the mountains, going anywhere, if you're bringing your fly rod, stop by Cutthroat Anglers because it's only, you know, half a mile off the highway, real easy to get in and out. If you forgot anything on your way up I-70, you can stop in there, find out what's going on. They've got their pulse on everything. You guys end up fishing the Arkansas and the reservoirs up in South Park as well.
No, yeah, we got a really, really wide range, and as far as I know, I'm almost certain of this. We probably hold more permits, you know, in terms of our guide service than anybody around. So the neat thing is, you know, we become kind of a clearinghouse of information. So, you know, most of it's, you know, 100% accurate, and then we kind of fabricate from there, you know, to keep it lively. So
that's because you're a fisherman.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's a great thing. Trapper, I appreciate all your good help and what you've done for the industry and how you've made it great and easy for guys like me to come up in it. And we appreciate your time, and we'll send everybody up your way and stop in and say hi.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you know, you're always welcome at the shop, brother. You practically got a chair with your name on it. You know, you got the Tim Emery Hall of Fame, the wall going there. So it's always good to see you, my man. And for anybody else that comes in, you know, you're always welcome with open arms. And the cool thing about Cutthroat is, you know, it's got the right amount of dust to it. So when you walk in, you're gonna feel good when you're in there.
It is. Trapper, I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon, and make sure you go out there and catch a bunch of fish.
Yeah, I will, buddy. I'm off on my next adventure down the Everglades next week, and then a couple foreign countries after that. So, you know, hey, I'll keep in touch with you, and we'll spread the word for you, man, and get some more stories out there.
Cool. Someday I'll be, you know, live vicariously through you and become like you and get to do all that same stuff.
You deserve it, my man, and it'd be a pleasure to be with you somewhere too. So.
Great. All right, thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome, bud.
Again, there are some legends in the sport of fly fishing and fishing in general that when you look at them from far away, you think you know, they're untouchable. Guys like Trapper Rudd, guys like Tim Hang, Lefty Cray, fellas like that. They're really not. You just have to go up there, say hi, talk to him. You can see Trapper at his shop in Silverthorne about any time, and is one of his business partners, Andrew Peterson, who is just as knowledgeable and just as nice guy, is always in there. Tall guy with some big fluffy hair. So when you go up to Cutthroat Anglers, say hi to those guys. But like I said, and like I keep repeating to everybody, when you see these guys out there at shows or in their shops, they're just like you and me. They're fantastic. They're nice guys, and they are true, true fishermen. So it is a good thing. Thanks for being here on the FishExplorer.com fly fishing or fishing podcast. A couple things to remember. Coming up in the near future, August 22nd, the South Platte Pro-Am Carp Slam going on in the South Platte, held by Denver Trout Unlimited, run by me. It's a fantastic opportunity to get out there, fish the South Platte right through Denver with a fly rod, catch as many fish as you can, including carp, trout, bass, both largemouth, smallmouth, walleye. It's a lot of fun. For more information on that, go to carpslam.org. Thanks for being here. Any questions or comments about this fishing podcast or any other podcast, please email me at tim@fishexplorer.com. In the meantime, have a good one. We'll talk to you next week, and make sure you go out.